Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, we have a great show for you today. My first guest is TV's Dr. Lillian Glass. She's a renowned body language and communications expert, and she's joining me today to share some fascinating insights into toxic men, how to identify them, deal with them, and heal from them. I'll tell you much more about that in just a moment. Coming up around 12:30, Susan Whitman Helfgott will share her moving story of how two complete strangers transformed each other's lives. Susan's husband waited many years for a heart transplant. Didn't work out as they had hoped it would, but you won't believe how his death helped someone else and the decision she had to make, his wife had to make. And closing the show today, we'll be talking with Steve Ulsher. He says he can help you figure out what your what is. So first, I'd like to welcome Dr. Lillian Glass to the show. She is a media personality and regular commentator for the Nancy Grace show. She's the body language expert for Swift Justice, Dancing with the Stars, Entertainment Tonight, and The Insider. Dr. Glass has also used her skills as an expert witness for both state and federal cases in the area of vocal forensics and behavioral analysis. She's written more than a dozen books, including the bestsellers Toxic People, He Says, She Says, and a body language book called I Know What You're Thinking. She also writes her own popular body language blog, as well as a blog on Psychology Today. And she's down in Beverly Hills, and she's helped countless clients, among them celebrities, politicians, and world leaders. Dr. Lillian Glass, welcome to the show today.
Oh, so glad to be here.
Well, I have to tell you, I don't blow smoke at people, but I think this work, I'm very impressed with your whole body of work.
Thank you.
Very interesting work that you've done over the years. And this particular book in particular is the one that I really think is going to, as you said to me before the show, change a lot of people's lives.
Yes, I do too, and I'm so proud of it. It was a very difficult book to write. I had to take a lot of people's stories and experiences and sift it together and come up with something that would make sense that could really help people. And the people that have read it so far, the reaction has been unbelievable. Men and women, even though it has a title that says Toxic Men, a lot of people think, it's just a book about male bashing.
No, no.
But it's really not. If you're a man and has been involved with a toxic woman, you could read the book as well and apply it to women, as many of these men that have read it have done.
Yeah, the book is called, I should say, Toxic Men, 10 Ways to Identify, Deal With, and Heal from the Men Who Make Your Life Miserable. It's about transforming your relationship and your life. It's all about empowerment, isn't it, really?
It really is. And, you know, we are so victimized. You know, we think, oh, gosh, well, I'm in a toxic relationship. I just have to stay there or walk away. But not really. You have several choices. You've got 10 choices how to deal with a person who is toxic. And one of the things that I did in the book that's so important is to let people know that there are certain types of men that are specifically toxic to them. And if you do an experiment, have your listeners do this experiment, where you take five people that, let's say, from grade school, or it could even be a parent, it could be a sibling, anybody, just five people, and list three adjectives next to them, five people that have made your life miserable, five men in your life who've made your life miserable. You will often see that the three adjectives that you put next to each name are very similar to the name below it and the name below that. Because when we see that, we see that these are the characteristics that we are allergic to in a certain type of person. So, you know that old expression, one man's trash is another one's treasure?
Right.
Well, it's the same thing with people.
Right.
It's one person's toxin is another person's non-toxin.
And we're not talking here just about love relationships. We're talking about all kinds of male-female relationships,
business,
including work.
You might have to be forced to deal with a boss, but you know, oh my goodness, I'm going to have trouble because these type of men are going to be very, very toxic to me. So in knowing that, you're going to see what to do and know what to do, and you will be in a position to know how to handle it because you'll have options. And that's what the beauty of this book is.
So tell me what you do give 11 types of toxicity, 11 types of toxic men. What is probably the most common one that you see? Is there a most common one?
Well, you know, there's not necessarily a common type of person. It's what is toxic, as I said earlier to you, but mm-hmm. I will share with you the different types of men that are toxic. And for one of them is the sneaky, passive-aggressive, kind of silent but deadly erupting volcano type. You know, these are the type of men that are very, you know, you think everything's going fine, just like Sandra Bullock did with Jesse James. She thought everything was fine. She, you know, she brings him up on the platform with her verbally when she says, oh, the man who has my back and I love him so much, Jesse James. But little does she know that he has had all of these affairs, that he is not who he says he is. So this kind of sneaky type, the sneaky passive-aggressive type.
Yeah. Can I ask you, so would somebody like John Edwards fall in the politician? Because I think he's stunned a lot. I never was a favorite of his, to be honest.
Well,
but
you and everybody else, he's one of the most toxic. He would be in the category of the wishy-washy, spineless wimp. What normal person that has humanity would ever leave a woman who was literally dying of stage 4 cancer? Who would do that? Who would also deny that the baby was his? Is and keep denying it. And to think that this man was going to run for president and get away with it, he's frightening. This is one of the most toxic men in terms of putting a face to it.
Yeah, because it is very hard to see some
of them. Spineless wimp.
Yeah. So, you know, we often think of toxic people being a very obvious behavior that would slap us in the face kind of behavior. But it's, as you say, it's often very sneaky and very quiet and very subtle.
Right. And sometimes it can be very dangerous, like the psychosociopath, the Joran von der Sloots of the world, who is the one who allegedly murdered the girl in Aruba, a little high school girl in Aruba and in Peru. And you look at somebody like him and you think, you know, he's an attractive man, but there are some signs that you really have to look for. And these are signs where he is, like, sneaky. He lies a lot. He doesn't have emotion. He's kind of like an emotional refrigerator. And that's very, very scary. Then you have people that are the me, myself, and I narcissists. They know the best. It's all about them. And when you think of somebody like a Kanye West, who it's all about him, and he knows best enough to get in front of an award ceremony and say who deserved the award and who didn't, what he did to Taylor Swift.
Yes,
even though he's done a lot of press lately, it's still unforgivable, this type of behavior. Then we see also the kind of self-destructive victim type, who is Charlie Sheen. You know, he's given chance after chance after chance, and yet he still comes across as self-destructive and does the same thing over and over again.
But he's a very obvious one, right? I mean, if you get hooked up with Charlie Sheen, come on, you've got to know what you're getting involved
with. Absolutely. He's got some women issues, to say the least, as does Mel Gibson. And this fellow is the angry, bullying control freak, as we all saw. It's his way or the highway. And there's some inner rage going on with him that really has to be addressed, or he could be destructive and very dangerous to somebody.
Yeah. You say any of us can get hooked up with a toxic man, but
anybody.
Women in the helping profession may be more susceptible. Tell us about that.
Great point. People that are nurturing, even mothers, people who have had children, people who are teachers, who are psychologists, people who are social workers, or people that are very, very nurturing, women especially that are nurturing and caring about other people, they are the ones that will give a second chance. And they sometimes think that they can transform people. Well, after all, they transform children. They transform all kinds of things in their life. Attorneys as well. You know, they can transform a client. They can transform an outcome. But unfortunately, you can't transform a man. What you see is what you get. You cannot change anyone.
Right, right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to ask you about some of the signs, some of the body language signs, some of the voice patterns and speech patterns that we should be looking for in toxic men as red flags. I'm talking in this segment with Dr. Lillian Glass. She's written a fantastic book. I know somebody was looking at this the other day, and she named about half a dozen people she was going to give this book to. The book is called Toxic Men, 10 Ways to Identify, Deal With and Heal from the Men Who Make Your Life Miserable. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us. Just when we thought you knew him, and you put all your trust in him, he'll just take all you told him and use it against you. It's couldn't Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
A live expo is coming to Seattle. Wellness learning, health lectures, going green workshops, and kids activities. Alternative Talk 1150 offers you a chance to win a pair of tickets. Listen to Conversations Live, Half Hour to Health, Mystic Radio, Northwest Legal Compass, and the Dr. Pat Show. And when you hear,
"It's alive!"
That's,
"It's alive!"
Dial 888-298-KKNW. That's 888-298-KKNW. The first caller wins. Complete details at 1150KKNW.com. Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, we explore how to get the job or promotion you really want in fearless job hunting. Bill Nowes shares how to get in the mind of your interviewer, address hidden objections, and close the deal. See conversationslive.net for more information.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live. I'm Vicky St. Clair, and I'm talking this segment with Dr. Lillian Glass. She has, as I said before, written this really fantastic book. I'm actually going to buy this for my two nieces who read, and then their job is going to be to tell my other two nieces who don't read all about it. It's called Toxic Men, 10 Ways to Identify, Deal With, and Heal from the Men Who Make Your Life Miserable. And I just want to say, as we said at the beginning, you know, we're not male bashing here.
No.
There are toxic people, both genders. We all
exactly.
know that. But today, in particular, we're talking about toxic men and how women can deal with those issues. One of the things that I hear all the time, and I'm sure you do, Dr. Glass, from people is... oh, but he said this and he said that, and yet he's behaving in a whole different way. What are some of the signals?
Exactly. For example, if he says, "Oh, I really love you, I really do," in a monotone voice, and he's looking away, and his feet are not pointed in your direction, you better not listen to a word he says because he doesn't mean it. If a man also is saying to you, "Yeah, here, have another donut, you wear it well," and he's kidding around, he's all just kidding, that's no kidding. That's a very, very interesting thing, because sarcasm is a sadistic communication in terms of dealing in a love relationship. That's not something you do. It's something you can do with your guy friends, but not something you do with the woman that you care about.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the, you talk about reading a man's face. It's not just a case of looking lovingly into his eyes, but as he's talking, you want to like examine his face. What are we looking for?
Right. if you want to see if he's lying to you, what is he doing? Is he blinking a lot? Is he cocking his head to the side? Is he shirking back? That may give you a lot of indication as to whether or not he's telling you the truth or not. Let's say you're on a date with somebody and you notice he's leaning back, his kind of chin is down. He's not that into you. So you really have to be so aware of what another person is doing. And you can't convince anybody. That's what the biggest mistake people make. Women make this mistake all the time. They think that their charm and their beauty and their cleverness can turn a person around. You can't. If somebody's not into you, they're not into you. There's nothing you can do. And if they're into you, they may be into you for just a little while. But get over it, because it's not going to last.
Yeah, I think the guy who was a consultant on Sex and the City wrote a great book on that. He's just not into you.
Right, he did. Yeah. And, you know, from that point of view, body language point of view, he didn't address that. And that's why we really need to look at that clearly from a body language point of view, from a vocal point of view. What does a voice say? What does a tone say? If somebody's going, or they're dying off at the end of a sentence, that's not a good sign. And those are things that we need to be aware of. We're aware of this automatically. You know, we're so smart as human beings. We know this. We instinctively know this, but we don't follow through with it. So let's even say you're in a business meeting and you see the turnoff signs towards you.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to get that, hey, that meeting's over, or it's not going to happen. Or you need to address, what do you think about this issue or that issue? Again, you have to confront it.
Yeah, now we all are told, you know, if somebody can't make eye contact with you, not being honest. But what are some of the other signs when somebody's not being honest with us?
I'm glad you brought up eye contact, because the other side of it is people that stare at your eyes all the time. They're very dangerous. Because if they're staring and looking into your eyes, they may be lying, because that's not normal behavior. The eyes do shift a little bit. But if somebody is constantly looking away, especially during crucial things, another thing is, how does a person smile at you? Do they have a genuine smile, or do their eyes crinkle up? And do they show teeth? If they do, they're into you. If they don't, and they just kind of have a pursed smile, kind of like that Mona Lisa smile, that's called ambivalent.
Right,
they're really
right.
Not happy about something.
Right, right.
With you.
I can certainly look back on some relationships with people and see those signals that later proved to be right.
Oh, sure. And the way a person, how much space they take up, how they look towards you. Are their shoulders hunched down? They may be intimidated by you. And, you know, even online dating, I have a part of that in the book as well, where you have to read the signals through online dating, from what a person calls themselves to how a person talks to you. For example, I had a client, and she's a very accomplished woman, and some guy wrote in. He said, oh, can you, you know, it's too bad you live in Connecticut, because I think he was living in Arizona, and he said, I'm too bad you're living in Connecticut. You seem to do everything. Can you also make space closer, or something sarcastic? And she just laughed and thought it was funny, but it wasn't funny. What he's saying to her is, hey, I'm really intimidated by you.
Mm.
And that's when she needed to hit the delete button.
Yeah.
She didn't need to engage him. But when you understand what even a person calls themselves, if they call themselves il passione, you know, they're out for passion. They're out for sex. They're not out for a relationship.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that was next on my list, because I think today, with people doing so much online dating, I read it's actually taking over meeting people in person.
Yeah, and it was a stigma 10 years ago. Now it's very acceptable, but it's become a situation where you have to be so careful. If somebody's calling themselves dog one, why are you calling yourself a dog? You are a dog. And, you know, don't get involved with that, because there are little hidden meanings. There are no jokes, as Freud once said. There's only truth.
Yeah. So how can we tell if somebody is a control freak online? Because as you said in this book, you know, throughout the book, they hide these things very well often.
So if you know what to look for, no. If somebody's telling you, well, no, I can only speak to you at 3 o'clock, or no, I have to go here, or I have to go there, they're telling you their agenda, they're a control freak. Because a person who's not a control freak is flexible. They want to say, when can we work it out? What's good for you? You know, they're, it's a give and a take situation.
Mm-hmm.
Or I want to do this, or I like to do that. Again, you can read it between the lines. Don't just read with your fantasy and your imagination, because there's so much that is real. And if you look back at a person's profile, you know everything about them.
Yeah. So once somebody realizes they're in a toxic relationship, why do they stay?
Oh, good question. They stay for a lot of reasons. Sometimes they stay because of the children. They really do want the children to have two sets of parents. Even though they don't get along, they may think it's best for the children. Some people, culturally, it's just forbidden. They won't do it. It's just they'd rather live it out. Other people, financially, they stay in a relationship. Other people have been beaten down so bad, they can't leave. They're so emotionally empty, they don't know where to go or what to do. So there are a lot of reasons people stay. But when it gets so toxic and you can't do it anymore, there are things you can do. And I don't advocate just leaving the relationship. I say try different techniques. Sometimes a humor technique. You know, look at it funny. Sometimes it's hard to do, but if you kind of change your thought pattern or breathe it out, they do something that aggravates you, just let it go because you have to stay in that relationship. Or you can use a direct confront technique, or you can use a fantasy. Wouldn't you like to fantasize about pushing them into ongoing traffic? But just make that a fantasy. You know, don't make that a reality.
Don't make it a reality.
But, you know, just anything to give yourself some relief. Or you may even use direct questioning techniques. Or you may want to do things that are giving them more love and kindness. Maybe that's what they need. A pat on the back is only a few vertebrae removed from the kick in the pants. So
yeah.
Maybe that pat on the back is what they need. Or you might even give them hell and yell back. Oftentimes the bully needs to be bullied.
Right.
So, you know, this is you've got options now. And if you can't function with them, then you unplug. And in the book, I give you ways to unplug that are very unconventional.
Right.
And very helpful to you. It's not like, oh, yes, talk to somebody. No.
No, you give some really good advice.
I mean, you know, if you want to eat chocolate, eat as much as you can. If you're going to get fat, eat it, because you're in a hunger right now, and you're in a position where you just have to have that nurturing. And if whatever it takes, know that it's temporary. You don't have to keep it on forever. But at this point in time where you're really going through a healing process, do whatever makes you feel great.
Yeah. This book is all about empowering ourselves. Dr. Lillian Glass, we are at the end of our segment round. I just wanted to mention real quick that you talk in the book about culture clash warning, because about toxicity versus toxic versus being different, because we're so global now and what's acceptable in one culture is totally unacceptable in another.
Yes.
But I want to drive people to your website, because there's some really great information up there, and you have a really good blog talking about body language and take this a step further.
Thank you.
So that is, what is your website?
www.drlilianglass.com. That's drlilianglass.com. Doesn't have a period, just drlilianglass.com. And you could get books, any products we have, an evaluation with me, anything.
Right.
I'm here for you.
A final thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
That we don't have to be victims, and that there are things we can do about it. And it really is about empowering yourself. And it is so wonderful to do this, because it's a worldwide phenomenon. And once we understand how to handle it, we can get along better with the opposite sex.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. I hope everybody's feeling more empowered now. And if you're not, go get the book. It's Toxic Men, 10 Ways to Identify, Deal with, and Heal from the Men Who Make Your Life Miserable by Dr. Lillian Glass. Please stay with us when we come back. We're going to talk with a woman who has an amazing story to share, and a very difficult decision that she had to make. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out Conversations.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
It's alive!
This is Alternative Talk 1150. Got it? Cool.
Welcome back, everyone. We are going to, in a moment, talk with my next guest, Susan Whitman-Helfgott. She has a fascinating story to share with us. But before we do that, I just want to talk a little bit about the Alive Expo. I'm going to be down there this weekend with a couple of the people who work with me and help me stay on track, Jennifer and Carol. And then I have a colleague who's going to be joining me, Pam. So we'll be down there. We have a ton of giveaways. And we would just love you to stop by our table and say hi and have a little chit chat. I'm also going to be talking down there about seven ways to get published and paid for getting published, because I know there are a lot of people who want to establish themselves as an expert and actually writing and getting your stuff in print for other people to see or digitally on the computer is a good way to get your name out there for relatively little cost. So I want to tell you also about David Steinman, who is going to be talking, and he will be talking at Saturday. Let me look. No, he'll be talking on Sunday at 2 o'clock. And David Steinman, I think he's just one of the most sincere, genuine people dealing in the green issues right now. He has a very deep concern. He's not what, you know, people think of as a tree hugger. He's built this whole industry around green issues. It's green patriotism. And he's going to talk on Sunday at 2 about coming clean with green patriotism, how to protect yourself, your family, America, and the planet. He's described as the world's leading safe shopping expert, and he exposes the harmful secret ingredients in many popular household and personal care products and explains how shopping for personal sustainability can make us stronger, the country stronger, and help save our planet. He is the author of Diet for a Poisoned Planet and co-author of The Safe Shopper's Bible. David Steinman has also represented the public interest on a committee of the National Academy of Sciences. He conducted the first ever study of pollution in the blood of fishermen and women on the west coast of the United States. And he's testified before Congress as an expert witness advising the federal government on safe seafood legislation. He's also worked with California's Proposition 65 to help protect consumers nationwide from carcinogens in popular household products and personal care. David Steinman founded the Green Patriot Working Group to further his mission, and really is very dedicated to the work that he does. So I just wanted to point that out to you. And again, he's going to be talking at Sunday at 2. And one of his colleagues is Dr. Lon Jones and Jerry Bozeman. They're going to be talking Saturday at noon about no more allergies, asthma, sinus infections, or middle ear infections. I'm definitely going to try and catch that because I'm fed up with dealing with allergies this year. So There's more about that on our website if you want to follow up, or you can ping me. You can certainly check out David Steinman himself at greenpatriot.us or greenpatriotradio.com or via his Living Healthy Living magazine, healthylivingmag.com. All right, so that's all coming up next weekend. Hope to see some of you down there. So I want to tell you now about my next guest. Her name is Susan Whitman Helfgott. She has told a very personal story here. This story began with a diary that a doctor recommended she keep. I'm going to bring her on and let her tell her journey in her own words. She's written a book called The Match, Complete Strangers, A Miracle Face Transplant, Two Lives Transformed. And the writer of this book was William Novak. Susan Whitman Helfgott is my guest. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. This is a very interesting story. I'm sure it was mixed blessings for you writing this. I'm sure some of it was very challenging. But let's go back a few years. Susan, your husband suffered with heart disease for a number of years, right?
Yes. Joseph had a heart condition, congestive heart disease, which many, many people suffer from. And over time, his heart became progressively weaker to the point where he finally was listed for a heart transplant in 2007, basically. And we waited for a heart, which we finally received in April of 2009.
And then what happened when he was having the heart surgery?
So the surgery itself went well. The heart itself was fine. But unfortunately, Joseph had some blood clots that were released at the point in time the surgery was completed, and one of them traveled to his head, and he basically had a massive stroke, and so he never woke up from the surgery, and he was, declared brain dead after about 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that set the stage for the organ donation that became the second phase transplant in the United States.
Right. Now, how old was your husband at this point, Susan?
Joseph had just turned 60.
Just turned 60. That's no age, is it?
No, so, not when you're my age, it's not.
Well, today it's not, you know.
I think someone said to me, old is anyone that is 20 years older than you are, basically.
That's true. That's true. So you are faced with the loss of your husband. Obviously there was a great deal of hope there for you. Getting this organ transplant, because I read in some reports this morning that 105,000 people are currently waiting on transplant lists, and approximately 28,000 of those find donors. So that's a lot of people who never, ever find a donor.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And depending on what organ you're talking about, people who are listed for kidneys, for all different reasons, there's a much higher rate of success, but in the heart game, it's about 1 out of 3.
1 out of 3.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So you know going in that this is a, you pray for the best, you hope for the best, but you do prepare for the worst. And in this instance,
right,
usually people die waiting because they don't get the heart.
Right.
Very rare for someone to actually die receiving a heart transplant. It almost does not happen.
Right. So.
That's
yes, a big shock for you. So you are there and you're shocked and you're, probably still in a state of denial at this point. And then what happens? You are asked for what?
Well, we had been very actively involved in organ donation issues up and through the several years leading to the heart transplant. You can't be walking around knowing that you ultimately need a transplant yourself and not be interested in helping the whole industry and help do whatever you can to promote organ donation. So the minute Joseph passed away, we knew that he would want to be an organ donor. And what was very highly unusual was that the heart that he received only a day before, because it was so viable and so strong, was actually able to be re-recovered and transplanted yet again into a third individual. And so I needed to give permission for that to happen.
Oh, wow.
That was a rather unusual thing in and of itself. It's only happened, a handful of times.
Right,
in New England.
Right.
That to me was a shock enough, that was possible. possible, I was very happy about it because it gave me some sense of something good coming out of this horror that was unfolding around me.
Mm-hmm.
And then this wonderful woman, Esther Sharves from the New England Organ Bank, who had guided me through that decision, reapproached me and, you know, asked me if I would be willing to help a man. And she described a gentleman who could not breathe on his own, who had lost his nose, his nasal cavity. I heard you speaking a moment ago about allergies and sinus infections. Imagine not having a sinus. I mean, really, literally not having that part of your face. And
right.
He also lost his mouth.
Right.
So he relied on a feeding tube.
Well, let's just share with our listeners, he'd had an accident. This was a fellow who, part Japanese, part Native American, he was adopted at birth or when he was a young boy, and
mm-hmm.
Grew up with a lot of issues, I guess, you know. And he got addicted to heroin while he was serving in Vietnam.
Correct.
Comes home, and years later, presumably, he has an accident where he actually fell onto subway tracks, and that's what burned his face off, right?
Right. He landed face first on the third rail, the electric rail of a subway stop in Boston in 2005.
Mm.
And basically, the voltage just vaporized his face. The fact he was alive when it was all over is really quite remarkable and a miracle in and of itself.
Right.
But since that time, he had lived completely as a recluse and unable to really communicate or go outside or live like a human being, basically.
And he'd lived in incredible pain, according to the information I got. And then one day he gets the news that, hey, we can actually give you a face transplant.
Right. Bowdoin Pomahawk, who is this really wonderful, dynamic young doctor from the Czech Republic, had happened to be on call the night, actually, that James Mackey fell and came into the Brigham and Women's Hospital. And he is a trauma and burn surgeon. And he became convinced after watching Dr. Max Dubernard and his associate, David Schell, in France do the first face transplant in 2005. He realized that for some individuals, truly, there were no other options available. Jim Mackey had 10 surgeries on his face to get him to the point where he, you know, basically had a cobbled together structure, but he still was unable to speak or to really eat or to breathe normally, and no number of surgeries would have ever restored that function. And truly, there are not a large number of people, but certainly more than several hundred in the world who really could use this life-giving kind of transplant.
Mm. And so, I mean, it's. I think it's one thing maybe donating an organ, but as you say in the book, the face is such a personal thing. And because of that, you are in touch with Jim Mackey now, the receiver of your husband's face. And you say because it was such a personal thing, you have developed a special bond.
Well, it's important to just say for the record that when I made this gift, it was my intention originally and my family's to remain anonymous. We really didn't want to necessarily become public figures about this issue, although we've
right.
now been put in that position. And a lot of good has come out of it as a result, so I think it was, in the end, meant to be. But it would have really been up to Jim Mackey, under normal circumstances in the organ donation world. It is up to the recipient to determine whether they wish to meet the family. And then the family has the right to either agree to be met or to withhold and remain anonymous. And because in this instance the infrastructure broke down and I was outed, for lack of a better word, Jim and I met each other because it was inevitable. And I really wasn't necessarily, when I first met Jim, thinking that we would, you know, form such a close bond as we have. But we have. And you know, I do speak with him very, very often, and the book was a joint effort. He told his story. It took a great deal of bravery on his part, I think, to be willing to share his story,
mm-hmm.
As it was to have the face transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Dr. Pomahawk shared his story. This is what prompted the book, were all these incredible stories of people who had come through very difficult adversity to get where they got, including my husband, Beau Palmahock, and Jim Mackey.
Right.
And we're all kind of joined at the hip now, to use a phrase.
Right.
There's no getting around it.
Well, I know that you two were brave in writing this book because you share some very personal information. And as you said, you and your family intended for this to be anonymous in the beginning. Listeners can find out more about this at thematchstory.com, thematchstory.com. The book is called The Match. It's The Match, Complete Strangers, A Miracle Face Transplant, Two Lives Transformed. And Susan Whitman Helfgott is our storyteller here. She wrote this book with William Novak. And it's really well written because he, of course, some great memoirs as well, too, of Tip O'Neill, Nancy Reagan, Oliver North. I mean, he's a very well-known biographer.
Yeah, Bill is biographer. Tremendous. And I've said it before, I could never have written the book without Bill. He gave me the encouragement to continue.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a fascinating event. Yeah.
Well, I thank you so much for being with
us
today and sharing that.
You're welcome. So much
that.
For having me.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, the book is called The Match. Susan Whitman Helfgott, and the website is thematchstory.com. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
A live expo is coming to the Seattle Center Exhibition Hall November 13th and 14th. Sample natural organic products, enjoy health lectures, cooking, yoga demos, and even an eco-fashion show. Lots of product samples, too. Advance tickets $5 online or $10 at the door. Go green November 13th and 14th. Details at AliveExpo.com. And at the event, visit the Alternative Talk Pavilion to meet Vicki St. Clair from Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. We are going to end this segment, this show today, with Steve Ulsher. He's written a book called A Step-by-Step Guide to Becoming Who You Were Born to Be, Journey to You. And a little bit about Steve. I can tell you that he's been an entrepreneur most of his life. He's spent the last 20 years developing and refining the theories and exercises that he's put together in this book, even though he hates writing. So let's bring him on, Steve Ulsher. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I want to ask you, first of all, you talk in the book about finding what your what is. So tell us what do you mean by that?
Well, it's the single most important question you can answer. And the question is, what is your what? Your what being the one thing your soul is compelled to do. So I believe that we were each put here on this planet with one specific thing to do. It's our inherent blueprint. It is our duty to heed that inherent blueprint and become who we were born to be. And it is all based upon having a clear understanding of what is your what. So what is the one thing that your soul is compelled to do? Once you can answer that question, absolutely everything else falls into place.
Now, you had a very different journey to begin with because you were an entrepreneur. You've started several businesses. Your father got taken ill, and that turned things around for you, right?
It did. About 3 years ago, my stepfather actually was on his deathbed, and I had a very profound experience with him. And I was actually holding his hand, and I had a vision of my own funeral. And the words that were spoken graveside were very brief. and the words were, "Here lies Steve Ulsher. He dedicated his life to chasing the almighty dollar." And that was the extent of the eulogy. And it was just this very odd vision that hit me really, really hard. because it had become crystal clear in that moment that my existence to that point was of benefit to me and those closest to me, but really no one else. And I aim to have a more meaningful impact on the world. And so literally the next day, I began the process of making a 180-degree shift.
Mm-hmm.
And that shift started with putting pen to paper. And eventually that process became the book Journey to You, a step-by-step guide to becoming who you were born to be, where I really wanted to share the tools and techniques and just some very powerful ideas that have worked very well for me in my own life that I had shared with others, but really wanted to get that word out in a much greater way. And I'm really just pleased as can be to say that that process, that book, that the culmination of those efforts resulted in Journey to You being named the Self-Help Book of the Year 2010 by USA Book News. So it's been really, really well received.
Oh, interesting. Very
and,
good.
And as a first-time author, I mean, you can only hope to get just a wee little bit of recognition as a first-time author, but to be recognized on that level is truly humbling.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've gone on and started something called the Reinvention Workshop, where I work with people of all ages to really help them become clear on what that one thing is that they were born to do. Again, what is your what? And then create that plan of action for moving forward. And I now host a radio show called Reinvention Radio, which is based out of Phoenix.
Right. Now, your reinvention began really with writing the letter of reflection, right?
Well, the letter of reflection is an exercise that's in the book Journey to You, and it definitely helped crystallize what it is that you want to accomplish between now and when you die. It's a little bit different than a eulogy because this is actually a letter that you're going to read to yourself on your deathbed and look in the mirror as you're reading this and know that you've accomplished what it is that you set forth in that letter. It's ostensibly creating yourself a roadmap that you then can heed and follow between now and when that day comes. And yeah, writing my own personal letter of reflection really was just an amazingly powerful exercise because we just kind of go through life day in and day out without really having an understanding of where we're going, and we just oftentimes operate like a windsock where life just happens and you blow this way and life happens and you blow that way, and it really creates this solid anchor into your soul that just provides the compass, the personal GPS, if you will, that you can always call upon.
Right. This is a very powerful exercise. I mean, you do mention Dr. Stephen Covey in here because he has a similar exercise, but he has you write your eulogy.
Yeah.
And when you do picture yourself at your own funeral and think, you know, did I, what are people going to say about me? What are they going to write on my tombstone? It really does make you stop and think. So if I wanted to change where I'm at right now, you have several tools in here. You've got like the 7 seeds of the soul and a 3-step process. I just lost the page. I can't find it right now.
Yeah.
But the 3-step process, I remember, begins with identify what you like, identify what you don't like. Then what are steps 2 and 3 on that?
Yeah. So those actually are the first 2 steps. And those, frankly, for some people are all the steps that you need because let me back up for a second. So the exercise that I created, which really helps people identify and pinpoint what their what is an exercise called the 7 Seeds of Your Soul. And I created this exercise for this society because, I mean, really, we're in an instant gratification society where people don't want to wait days and weeks and months to get to their answer. I mean, this is something that people can take on and get to an answer within 15 minutes. And so, you know, Myers-Briggs is great, what color is your parachute is great, and all those other sort of modalities are great, but, you know, frankly, it's time to catch up with where the mentality is of our current society, and that's what this exercise is designed to do. So, yeah, so step 1 really does involve identifying all of the things that you absolutely love to do. Now, this can be something that took place when you were 3 years old, it could be something that took place last week, but the idea is just get it all down on paper. Step 2 is identifying all of the things that you really hate to do. And that in itself can sometimes be all the tools, all the technology, if you will, that you need to become clear that either what you're doing now is the total antithesis of what it is that your soul is compelled to do, or it just awakens you to the fact that, boy, you know, all of these things that I can't stand, I loathe, are things that I actively take on a daily basis. And from where I stand, every minute you engage in an activity you abhor, you reduce your life expectancy by an equal amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really a crucial component of this process is to be clear on, you know, how you're wired and what you're wired to love and what you're wired to hate. And then the third step is a cross-pollination between the two categories where you go against the seven seeds of your soul, which are ostensibly seven questions. And by cross-pollinating the two columns against these seven questions, at the end of this, again, very simple exercise, what will float to the surface are your one or two or three what that really meet all the criteria you're compelled to do. And if you find more than one, well, then it's a matter of trying to find some synergies between them and where you can really hang your hat moving forward.
So you are on your journey. I mean, you're still, we're all on a journey, right?
Absolutely.
But I seem to remember somewhere reading, I just found it here, the destination is the road. The journey is the destination.
Yeah.
And so where are you at with your journey? And I have to ask you to do it very quickly because we're almost at the end of our segment.
Not a problem. So where I'm at is I'm on the road because ultimately that is the destination. I mean, we ultimately draw lines in the sand and figure when we get to this point, then our life will be X, Y, or Z. But the fact of the matter is that once you get to that point, you create another line in the sand, and you then direct your life and your energies towards achieving whatever that next step is that you assess. So the point is, you are exactly where you're supposed to be. The destination is the road, and this journey that we're all on ultimately is the destination.
Well, I think that's good advice to end this show on. We've packed a lot of information into this show on some different subjects here. Steve Ulsher, where can people find out more about you?
Thanks for that. And what I'd ask people to do is if they're interested in the book, for the first five people who send me an email, I will send you a free copy. So my email is steve@steveulsher.com. That's steveolsher.com. steve@steveulsher.com. And send me an email. The first five people can get a free copy of the book. And there's all sorts of fun stuff, information, tidbits, and so on. That's very, very useful at steveulsher.com as well. And, of course, Journey to You is available on Amazon and was just named the Self-Help Book of the Year 2010 by USA Book News.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Steve Ulsher. And thank you for that kind offer of giving away five free copies to the first people who email you. Appreciate it. And I want to just tell you again, the book is called Journey to You, A Step-by-Step Guide to Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. And Steve Ulsher, my guest. And you can find out more information about any of our guests at conversationslive.net. I believe this should be updated by the end of the day because my web guy's out of town right now. But everything will be updated by the end of the day. Podcast will be live. And if you have questions on today's show, you can reach me at Vicky@conversationslive.net or 800-495-7617. 800-495-7617. Thanks for being with us today. Hope we see some of you down at the Live Expo next Saturday and Sunday. And we'll be back live on Monday with another new show. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.